To be able to be here today and introduce Robert Taylor. Fortunately, I don't have to do like I heard one gentleman do one time introducing a man. They handed him a card and he held it up and he said, "It says on this card right here that the next speaker needs no introduction." He said, "I'm sure glad that's true, because that if it's not, we're in a lot of trouble, because I've never heard of him." Well, I can tell you that's not the case with me and Robert Taylor. I've known Robert for 30 years. We were fellow students at Abilene Christian, Bible majors together 30 years ago. That dates both of us, I guess. I was privileged to and honored to be a groomsman in his wedding for he and his sweet wife, Vicky, and they have two beautiful daughters, wonderful daughters. So I've known him for some time and have appreciated he and his talents for some time. He is a graduate of Abilene Christian University. He holds both bachelor's and master's degrees with an emphasis in Old Testament studies. For 20 years or so, he served as the pulpit minister for several churches in the Texas area. He's currently the associate minister and the minister of evangelism and administration for the Waterview Church, Church of Christ, over in Richardson. Robert's a very astute student of the Word, a man who stands firmly on the restoration ideal, with the Bible being the pattern for the New Testament church. And I'd say the thing that I would call your attention to this morning, particularly because of his subject matter, is I not only knew him as a fellow student and participated in personal affairs for him, but I've served as an elder at the Waterview Church of Christ for several years now, working very closely with Robert Taylor. Robert has distinguished himself as he's on our ministerial staff there, but he's distinguished himself as a man of many talents. He has an extraordinary and exemplary work ethic. Everything he does with quality, precision. He's a very talented administrator, a very tremendous writer, an eloquent speaker, as you'll hear today, outstanding teacher and trainer and evangelist. But particularly for this morning, I would let you know that he works very closely with the Waterview eldership. He meets with us regularly. We could have no better supporter, no better encourager. He's very positive, helpful, and respectful to the eldership, and he supports us as he supports the Waterview Church. So it's my privilege to introduce him to you this morning as he's going to talk about the current challenges for elderships.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate your introduction. He's having to leave now. He coaches a Little League baseball team, and the reason he's going today is because they wanted him to play on Wednesday night, and he refused to play on Wednesday night, and which is a hard thing to find among people today. They would rather do whatever people tell them to do and just go along with it. 1 Samuel chapter 8, there was a crisis of leadership. Samuel, the old graying man, was looking for a successor. When the people came to him one day and they said, "We want a king. Give us a king like the nations around us." Samuel was absolutely heartbroken. He prays to God, "They have rejected me." And God puts him in the right perspective. "They have not rejected you. They have rejected me." And one of the things that you find out is, as they got a king, the change of leadership changed the whole complexity of the nation for the future to come. And that's always been true. For elders, there is a challenge that we all face if you're an elder. There's a lot of criticisms of elders today. So much so that it's probably harder today than ever to find a man who wants to even be an elder. And because of that, people say, I just don't want to handle that kind of pressure. Now, there are a lot of changes that have taken place in our congregations over the last several years as it concerns elderships. There is a change, and this may or may not work. You may get to see that one the rest of the time because I'm not playing with it. I'll do it. That's my theme song. That'll work. So it's better than being stuck on something else. There's been a change in the models that we use. We have a business model, a model that's modeled after CEOs and a board of directors. The CEO runs things. The board of directors votes on various things that affect financial instruments. We've developed from the religious world, the pastor system, where what we say is the elders are supposed to be the shepherds, they care for the flock, but you let us run the church. And so we've read about it, we've gone to seminars about it, and that seems to be the way it's going to be handled. But there's also been a change of vocabulary. When I was growing up, you always thought about the leaders of the local church as being elders. That was the sign of maturity, experience, and wisdom. But today, the term in vogue is the term shepherd. It's softer. It's easier. And people want shepherds. I had dinner with a fellow not too long ago who was a preacher of a church, and he said, you know, we finally got our elders just to be visitors. All they do is visit anymore. And I didn't ask the question, but the question I wanted to ask is, well, then who takes care of the rest of the things in the church if that's all they do? Elders face a lot of challenges, and those challenges come in a lot of forms. Sometimes they're doctrinal, sometimes they're practical, other times they're leadership-oriented type challenges. First challenge that we need to look at this morning is the challenge of doctrine, to understand the role God gives us. There are a couple of calls that we keep hearing today. One is a very modern, very contemporary call, and the call is to be a shepherd. When you talk to people, said, we want people as long as they are shepherds. We want men who are going to be that for us. Now, anytime somebody uses a word, even a good word, you have to stop and say, now, what does that mean to you? And for lack of a better term, most people mean they want elders or shepherds who hug and cuddle. They go around saying, isn't it wonderful, you're great, glad you're here, and they love you and they care for you and they visit the hospital, but stay out of our business. Love me, but leave the church alone. But then the other call set up against it is God's call. In Acts chapter 20, Paul calls the Ephesian elders to Miletus. And in that setting, he says, I'm never going to see you again. So I need to leave you some last comments, some last words about your role. And he turns to them, and in verse 28, he says, keep watch over yourselves and all the flock over which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. Then listen to what Paul says. Be shepherds of the church of God. He used the same word. But we have to ask the same question. What does that mean? Well, when you think about what it means, there are a lot of things that it might imply. One thing it implies is there is some sort of planning and vision taking place. When I was in my first full-time ministry, I lived 10 miles from everywhere. And that's not a cliche. It was 10 miles to the town to the south, 10 miles to the town to the north, 10 miles to the town to the east, 10 miles to the town to the west. Made some interesting experiences. But one of the things that happened outside of our bedroom window and outside of my office window as well, I looked over a piece of property where the fella kept sheep. So I got 3.5 years of experience with the other kind of sheep. I've got 30 years experience with one kind and 3.5 with the other. And I watch sheep, and sheep are interesting. They eat with their heads down. And a sheep will literally eat all of the grass off of the ground, root and all. There's nothing left. And what a shepherd had to do, he had to go out and look and see how, what the grass is getting thin, and he said, we need to move over here. We've got to change pasture to let this pasture grow back. Because if you just let them alone to eat what they wanted, they just graze it all off. And they die of starvation. Because sheep don't know when to stop. At some point in time, elders have to become planners and visionaries. Of saying, where are we going next? What are we going to do? What are we going to stand for? What are we not going to stand for? What are we going to be known for? What our reputation is going to be? And elders have to stop for a moment and say, now, here's where we stand. Where are we going? Because there is nobody else in the church who will do that. But not only is a shepherd, according to God, a visionary or a planner, he's also a feeder. He feeds the flock. And there are a lot of things that we know that happens when the flock needs to be fed. God tells us to feed the flock. And when He does, He puts a very important stipulation on us, and that is the right things. The other thing about sheep I notice is they'll eat anything. They just didn't eat grass. They eat cuckoo burrs, and they eat poisonous weeds, and whatever they want to eat, they'll eat. And, I had a fellow one time object because he didn't like people in the church being called sheep. He thought that was offensive. I kind of had to agree with him being around sheep enough. That's kind of an offensive term if you're not careful. But literally, sheep will eat whatever they want to eat. And so the shepherd has to walk out into the ground and say, now, what is this? Oh my, this is poison. This will kill the flock if we let this flock eat here. So he has to move it to someplace else that's going to have better grass. We as elders, if you're an elder in this room, need to think about what's being fed to your church. There are a lot of possibilities, I found out. The obvious one is what I think we all would agree with. We need to teach the Bible. At Waterview, we have a philosophy of education that hasn't changed in 40-plus years of existence. We teach text in context on Sunday morning. Every 11 years, you go through the New Testament. If you've been there since the beginning, you are wading through the book of Philippians for the fourth time now. That's a good thing. We can talk about the text, and we can talk about the context. But I also know there are churches that don't do that. I remember one Christmas, we had come up for Christmas, and we had passed by a congregation of the Lord's Church that had on its marquee for the sermon title for the Sunday morning sermon before Christmas. The sermon title that day was going to be How to Have a Stress-Free Holiday. I thought, boy, I missed that class in college. They tossed out that text. See, we can talk about sociology, and we can talk about psychology, and we can talk about all the things that make us feel good. We can raise people's self-esteem. Question is that what needs to be taught? Not only is a feeder important, but Paul also turned and said you also have to be a protector. He says in Acts chapter 20 and verse 29, he says, I know that after I leave, savage wolves will come from among you and will not spare the flock, even from your own number. Men will distort the truth in order to draw away the disciples. It was David when he went out to the battlefields and he saw Goliath and he saw the challenge that no one would take. And he knew what shepherds did. He turned to Saul when he said, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth, and when it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, and I killed both the lion and the bear. That's what a shepherd does. He protects the flock from the ravages of the wolf, from the lion, the bear. I'd like for you to think for a moment about where most of our troubles have come from in our fellowship. No one came in off the street, a member of another religious group, and tried to persuade us of things. They never came in and told us, look, I'm a member of such and such a church, and I don't think you ought to be practicing baptism anymore. Or I think the Lord's Supper is kind of foolish all the time. It has risen from within us, not from without us. We have been influenced from without us, but it's come from within us. And a shepherd is to protect the flock from the things that get within the flock, because the wolf doesn't marginalize. He goes into the flock and seizes the weak ones in the middle to scatter them. An elder, a shepherd, is to be a protector. But he is also to be the obvious, which is a caregiver. He's supposed to love people. He's supposed to care for people. Back in Ezekiel, Ezekiel accused the kings and the princes of Israel of not being very good shepherds. He says in Ezekiel chapter 34 and verse 4, "You've not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You've not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally." So they were scattered because they had no shepherd. People in our congregations do have problems. There are deaths always. And people grieving, and they need someone there to put their arm around them and say, "I am here for you." There are people living life's disappointments. They've lost a job. Their children are rebellious. Their marriages are on shaky ground, and they need someone to come with perspective and teaching and wisdom to help them understand it and to get over it. There are people who struggle with their faith, and they say, "I'm not sure I believe this," or, "I have heard this. What about this thing about baptism not being important?" Or, "What about instrumental music? I don't understand it. I don't think it's that big a deal." What do you do? You surround them with your care and your love, and you teach and you bring them back. You see, one of the things that happens in our culture is trimming down the role constantly. And finally, it's got it down just to one aspect of what God has said, and that's the shepherd. The interesting thing is that God keeps broadening it out. He doesn't want this specialist down here. He wants a generalist. He wants the feeder. He wants the planner. He wants the caregiver. He wants the protector. He wants all of those things in an elder. That's what he calls a shepherd. That's his picture. And the truth is, the challenge that we face is not a lot different than the challenge they faced in the first century. I think they faced the same exact pressures to do all of those things that we do in the 21st century. There was a movie several years ago called Hoosiers, and it's a story about a basketball team from Hickory, Indiana. Itty bitty little school, and this team had never done much. And one year they had one of those miracle type seasons. They just beat everybody they met, and they ended up in the state finals. And so they went down to Indianapolis, and in Indianapolis there was this giant arena with the speakers and the scoreboard hanging from the ceiling, with the finely polished wood on the floor, with 10,000 seats around them. And all of these boys from the country looked at it and thought, "Oh my, where are we and what are we doing?" And so the coach, who was played by Gene Hackman, took a tape measure out of his pocket and he handed it to one of the boys. He said, "You stand on the foul line." He said, "You go up and you measure the basket." He said, "Now, son, how far is that?" He said, 15 feet. He said, "Okay, now the shortest one, you get on the shoulders of the tallest one." He said, You hold the tape measure on the floor and you measure to the rim of the basket. Now how tall is that? It's 10 feet. He said, boys, if you'll go back home to our gym in Hickory, you'll find out the floor is exactly the same there as it is here. You see, the floor is exactly the same in the 21st century as it is in the first century. Same kind of challenges, doctrinally. Same kind of infiltrations. Same kind of needs. And same kind of men are needed. The challenge is to understand the job that God has given us. But once you've understood that, then there is a much more practical challenge. Because it's one thing to say that's what we need to be. It's another thing to put it into practice. And so the second challenge is to learn how to connect with the people that we're trying to serve. And one of the things we kind of believe in our minds is everybody's just alike. My mother fixed some cookies called cowboy cookies. Now, cowboy cookies are, I don't know if that's the real name for them, that's what she called them, but they are chocolate chip cookies with peanut butter put in. Why anybody in the world would ruin a perfectly good chocolate chip cookie by putting peanut butter in it, I don't know why. My mother did. But the worst part was she said, I'd come home, she said, I fixed your favorite kind of cookies. Now, I don't like them. And they're the cowboy cookies. I said, I don't like those. She said, yes, you do. I said, no, I don't. She said, yes, you do. Now, that was just the way she was. It finally dawned on me what she was thinking. She was thinking, now, my brother who loves them, if he likes them, I must do the same thing. He still eats cowboy cookies. I still won't touch them. Maturity tells us that there's a difference in people. What we have discovered in our congregation, one of our practical struggles has been not a lot of the doctrinal thing, but a very practical problem of the differences of people. There are two kinds of people in the church, and that's an oversimplification. I'm aware of that. But there are people who are thinkers, and there are people who are feelers. And the thinkers, you're probably going to find yourself on one side or the other in this room, and I thought about asking you which you are, but I don't want to embarrass you when your wife tells you to put your hand down. A thinker, though, is someone who likes facts and concepts. And they ask all these questions. They say things like, how much is it going to cost? And how long is it going to take? And how many people are going to be involved? And they ask the question, what do you think about this? And they expect to hear a rational opinion back. And when they start talking about things, they said, now we've got to put all of our ducks in a row. We've got to get all the plan together and make sure it works just right before we unveil this. Seems prudent, doesn't it? And then when they start talking, they said, we want what is best for the church. Now, on the other side of the aisle, there are the feelers. And the feelers feel it to death. It's all emotion for them. And after all, if they like it, what's the problem? And the question is not any of the questions you ask. In fact, if you say, how much is this going to cost? They're very offended. You have just gotten to be an opponent to that whole proposition because you ask how much it's going to cost. Who cares what it's going to cost if I like it? And the question is not, how do I think about it? It's, how do I feel about it? And when you ask, how do I feel about it, is, I don't see how anybody could oppose this since it's such a wonderful idea. So we don't need any plans. Let's just go do the thing and it'll work out great in the end. And their question is not, what's good for the church? It's, what's good for the people? Now, neither are right and neither are wrong. They just are. But it gets some interesting problems. One of the problems we've had recently, it's not really a problem, it's just kind of an interesting tidbit. Earlier this year, we started a program called Faith Builders on Sunday night. One of the things it did was it took our kids and taught them Bible lessons while the adults were worshiping on Sunday nights. Not on Sunday morning, Sunday nights. Started by some of our younger ladies who really wanted something for their kids, and they formulated this about a year ago. And I could tell you all kinds of things that could fit in here, but I'll just cut to the chase, and that is, it lifted our attendance. done marvelous for Sunday night attendance. And so Robert Oglesby, the preacher, turns to one of the ladies and says, "You know, I want to just tell you how much we appreciate all the work you've done, because this has really boosted our attendance." Now, what do you expect to hear next? Here's what I'd expect. "Boy, I sure am glad you recognize how good this program was." Next thing out of this woman's mouth was, "Well, the kids are having fun too." Now, you have to stop and think about that for a moment and think, what difference does that make? All the difference in the world. And so the feeler does that. Feelers need thinkers, and thinkers need feelers, because all of us thinkers help put the plans together to make it work, but all the feelers supply the energy to make it happen. I dare say any good thing in your church has started because somebody felt very strongly about it. But I also think anything that has kept going in the church had somebody who knew how to make it work. There are a lot of things you can do to help connect with people. A train engine, when it tries to grapple with a car, never expects the car to come to it. It has to go to the car, grapple it carefully, then it can move it forward. There are a lot of things you can do. You can write notes. You can be complimentary. A lot of things, what we've learned is that sometimes you just need to go up to some people and say, "We are so glad that you're part of this congregation." Now, for the thinker in you, you go, "Well, of course we are. We hadn't gone up and said, would you please go to that church up the road?" And so if we don't say that, we want you here. But they want to hear the opposite. "We are so glad to have you here." But be careful how you solve problems. Because you may solve the problem as a thinker, and you do all the right things and put it all in the right row, and the people on the other end said, "But I don't feel that anymore." Before you solve a problem, go to the feelers and get them to help you solve the problem. They'll bring the emotion to it. I'm reminded of the woman who was flying on the airliner. She was scared to death of flying. And she's in the seat next to the aisle, across the seat from this fellow who's very experienced, and the lights begin to flicker, and he calls the flight attendant over and said, "Can you do something about that?" And she said, "Yes, sir, I will." So she goes out and she fixes the problem. She turns the lights off. The woman turns across the aisle and says, "Whatever you do, don't say anything about the engines." There are a lot of ways to solve problems that a lot of people don't like. But the challenge of grappling with the feelers and the thinkers and getting the toe together is one of the great challenges today of leadership in making the church function and work. And I dare say a lot of things that have gone awry may have started, at least, on that battleground. But then comes a great leadership challenge, and that's not to be reactive. Elders tend to wait for things to happen. They wait for the complaints to come. They wait for the problem to come. In Acts chapter 6, there's a problem, and the grumbling is taking place, but who solves the problem? It's those apostles. They get together, they make the plan, they present the plan, the people carry out the plan. They didn't wait for things to happen. A lot of times we have to make things happen before anybody sees them. Sometimes you need to look at the needs of your congregation and say, what are those needs? We have a growing 20-something class that a year and a half ago were 3, and it's up to about 40 now. The elders saw that coming and put that in place before it was asked for. And sometimes you look at the problems and you say, I've got to do something about the problem. And if it's a small problem now, if you don't do something about it, if you don't confront it, if you don't ask the questions now, you will have to ask bigger questions and pay a whole lot more pain later. If there are some grumblings in your congregation, address them today, not next week. Sometimes you also need to think ahead and say, what are our plans for the future? Neighborhoods change. Waterview, we had a growing church for a long, long time. We didn't have to do anything for it because Fox and Jacobs was doing it for us. They were building houses all the way around us. And we pick up 10, 20 people a week. But all that stuff's moved to McKinney or further. And so we have to be much more deliberate about evangelism now. We can't wait for them to come to us. We have to go to them. And elders have to be able to see that before it's mandated by culture. Because the person who goes first is the person who's the leader. And the person who waits is always the follower. The truth is, the challenges of our leadership and as elders come in two challenges. One, we have to shepherd the sheep. We have to care for the people. Find ways to do that. It could be you just need to write a note. Power of a note, the power of a phone call, is something that is so underestimated. You may not have time to go to the hospital. Make a call. Send a note. But while you're shepherding the sheep, understand something. You can't just shepherd sheep. You have to shepherd a whole flock. And you can say, I don't like the whole flock. I'd rather just deal with the sheep. That's where the battle is lost, at the flock level. That's where the problems begin to surface. That's where the planning has to take place. That's where the Bible has to be taught. That's where the questions have to be asked. And you cannot escape the fact that there is a flock, a whole flock, that needs you. Because the flock is always in danger. In Jebus, Turkey, there were some shepherds who were having breakfast one morning, and as they were eating, they noticed something. They saw one sheep jump off a cliff, fall to its death in a ravine below. They didn't think much about that. But then, to their horror, 1,500 sheep followed it. Right off the cliff into the valley below. They estimate the loss to that shepherd was $100,000. Because sheep will follow another sheep when there's not a shepherd. Our churches need you if you're a shepherd. But they need you to be the complete shepherd that God wants you to be. A shepherd for the sheep and a shepherd for the flock. And the challenges we face are the challenges of opportunity and danger together. Paul said, be shepherds of the church of God. Thank you.